This is Stimulus. I'm Tara Cleary. The sweet sound of a beer being poured. But not just any beer, a tasty craft brew. America is home to arguably the most exciting small or craft brewery scene. In 2008, the Smithsonian magazine said, "The best beers in the world today are being made in the US." So how does craft beer differ from the light lager styles that are popular all over the world? Most craft brews are more flavorful and complex. Brooklyn Brewery in New York City was one of the pioneers of the craft beer resurgence in the USA.
I was a journalist for 15 years, first 15 years of my working life. And I got in my head I wanted to cover a war. And so I studied Arabic and said I wanted to go to the Middle East. And a year later, I landed in Beirut as the Middle East correspondent for AP.
Steve Hindy is Brooklyn Brewery's founder and chairman. His journalism career eventually brought him back to the U.S., but he got bored being a newspaper editor.
I started reading about these small breweries starting up around the country, and it seemed Brooklyn would be a great place to do it, given there's an amazing history of brewing here.
Brooklyn Brewery sold its first beer in March 1988, but that didn't put Steve on easy street. You have to remember, this was a market used to drinking watery sweet lagers.
Early on, when in 1988-89, when we were starting, it was really hard to sell Brooklyn lager beer here in Brooklyn. You know, a lot of people thought it was too dark, too bitter, and you know, they thought we were crazy.
But after a while, Brooklyn's brew took off.
The Brooklyn brand has become an international brand, and it's not like that was our plan. That just kind of happened. You know, when you start a company like this, you create a brand, and then the brand has a kind of life of its own. We had people coming to us from Japan, from the UK, from Sweden, from countries all over the world, and saying, you know, I tried this beer in New York City. I've never had a beer like this. It's very different than our beer in Japan.
Despite Brooklyn Brewery's growth, it will sell around 300,000 barrels of beer in 2017. It is still very much a small beer maker. Steve would have to sell more than 6 million barrels of beer a year to lose craft brewery status.
Mega Brew merger is on tap as the world's largest beer companies. The top two are set to get married.
Has given the green light for the Anheuser-Busch InBev to take over SAB Miller.
The deal could cost as much as $122 billion.
In 2016, two of the world's beer giants merged in one of the largest corporate consolidations on record. Anheuser-Busch InBev, or ABI, which makes Budweiser, acquired SAB Miller, becoming the largest beer producer on earth. The price tag, more than $100 billion. Steve Hindy believes the reason for the merger was not only financial, but partly because big beer feels threatened by growing craft beer sales.
I think their strategy is to slow the growth of the craft segment because, you know, that growth is eroding their big light lager brands.
We, in 1978, for example, had 42 brewing companies, less than 100 brewing locations, and today we have 5,700 breweries.
That's Julia Herz, the craft beer program director at the Brewers Association. She says independent craft beer makers comprise 98% of breweries, but only produce around 13% of beer by volume. Yes, that's not much, but that number is more than double what it was 6 years ago. And Anheuser-Busch InBev is feeling the pinch. Its U.S. beer production has dropped by millions of barrels as more and more people turn to local craft beer. I wanted to find out what beer drinkers think, so I visited my neighborhood bar in Brooklyn, The Gate. It has 24 rotating taps, and 22 of them are craft beers.
I think it's awesome. I have a beer list going, and I'm trying to try new ones. Yeah, I think it's cool. It's good to support local stuff, and I usually try to.
I prefer craft beer. Before, I was only familiar with the basics, you know, Budweiser, Miller Lite, those things, they taste like shit. I think the different kinds of craft beer, they allow for a much broader palate.
I tend to drink more craft beers, the more the merrier. We have not found the ceiling of this industry yet. There has not been the point at which the market is flooded with too much good art. And by art, I mean craft beer.
And the craft beer scene is still growing.
What's really interesting is those big brewers, for years, I think they believed that the craft phenomenon would crest, that it would ebb, that it was, you know, sort of a fad and it would run its course.
ABI decided that if you can't beat them, buy them.
I think they realized this is not going to stop, that more and more people are going to switch from light lager beer to craft beer. And so they went all in. ABI has bought 10 craft breweries in the U.S. They bought a number of craft breweries around the world. Miller Coors has also bought a few.
As big beer has gotten into the full-flavored beer scene and started to acquire formerly independent craft brewers, we're starting to see an illusion of choice in the marketplace.
They're really using those craft breweries now to limit the choices of beer drinkers. So many bars you go into these days will have 12 taps, and it looks like a great variety of local American craft beer, when in fact they're all owned by ABI.
Many bars and restaurants are purchasing from big beer in a sense of looking at them as a one-stop shop for beer. That is very threatening to the advanced beer culture that we know today.
ABI, like many other large corporations, knows the best way to grow fast is to merge, buy out the competition, and create a monopoly in that industry.
When a corporation acquires a competitor or near competitor, it may enhance the corporation's market power to the point that the corporation can use that market power against consumers by raising price or by excluding rivals from the market or by retarding innovation, that kind of thing.
Gary Reback is a Silicon Valley antitrust lawyer. He's been called the protector of the marketplace, and he's well known for his work against Microsoft's monopoly. Corporate consolidation isn't new. The first wave of mergers and acquisitions in America started in the late 1800s. At the time, one of three antitrust laws, the Sherman Act, was already in place.
Well, lot number 7 is the 67 Chevrolet.
All right, lot number 7, 67 Chevrolet. $300.
That's an auction, selling off the Standard Oil, California's assets in 1972 when it became Chevron. The Standard Oil, established by John D. Rockefeller in the late 1800s, was one of the Sherman Act's first targets. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1911 that the company be broken up.
Antitrust law was invented in the United States.
Gary Reback again.
Like many other good American ideas, it has been adopted elsewhere, particularly among the European countries, but also in China. And these days, frankly, the Europeans enforce antitrust law far more readily than we in the United States do.
For obvious reasons, large corporations don't like to be restricted from gobbling up competition, often claiming that the market will correct itself. But Gary says that breaking up these huge entities has historically yielded positive results, sometimes leading to entire new industries.
Hello?
This weekend. And every weekend, you can telephone coast to coast for as little as 70 cents.
Take the old AT&T, which was split up in 1982.
As a result of that breakup, other companies began to put fiber into the ground. That's where we get a lot of new technologies, and in particular, the Internet.
The Sage computer made by IBM.
Then there's IBM.
In order to avoid being broken up, IBM separated its hardware from its software. So as a result of the unbundling by IBM, that's where the American software industry comes from.
Microsoft makes software that makes computers work for you.
In the 1990s, Gary led the efforts to target Microsoft's monopoly.
As a consequence of keeping Microsoft from dominating the new wave of technologies, we have applications like Google and Facebook and everything else. when again, that's a direct consequence of our antitrust enforcement. So we have quite a rich history in the United States. We've known historically what to do about these problems, but we just haven't done much of that recently.
2015 was the biggest mergers and acquisitions year in U.S. history, with almost $4 trillion in deal value. In spite of these consolidations, there's still a false sense of competition in America. We think that there are plenty of companies vying for our business in any industry, but that's not true. Take travel booking sites. We have plenty of them, right? There's Expedia, Travelocity, Hotels.com, Orbitz, Cheap Tickets, HomeAway. Every one of those is owned by Expedia. You have four airlines serving 80% of all passengers. A handful of cable and internet companies provide most of America's cell phone and TV service. This dominance is always bad for you, the consumer, because it shrinks or eliminates a competitive market. It seems that companies can expand virtually unrestricted. Are our antitrust laws outdated in the internet age?
No, I don't agree. People made the same statements back when Microsoft was dominating the industry. The very same statements. And eventually, after a lot of prodding and pushing and public discourse, we got the government to file a lawsuit against Microsoft, and they were adjudged to be in violation of the antitrust laws under the longstanding antitrust principles. Our laws work just fine in the contemporary technology sector, but of course you've got to enforce the law. And that's the problem we're having. We don't have a problem that our laws are outdated. We have a problem that our laws have not been enforced recently.
Gary blames the landmark 2010 Supreme Court ruling known as Citizens United. In a nutshell, it allows corporations to make unlimited contributions to politicians and their campaigns.
This has had a very profound effect on our ability to enforce the antitrust laws. I tell people that we may be out of the business of breaking up monopolies forever unless we can get that Supreme Court ruling reversed in the subsequent Supreme Court decision. But that certainly is the root of our problem.
How is the craft brewing establishment dealing with what it considers a growing beer monopoly?
They're playing hardball with us now, and, you know, we're doing our best to play hardball back.
Big beer is buying up craft breweries left and right, hoping to take that independence away.
TakeCraftBack.com is a tongue-in-cheek, serious endeavor on definitely a gargantuan task. We've set out to purchase Anheuser-Busch InBev and the $213 billion it would take to purchase them before they can purchase any more small and independent craft brewers. It's a definite tongue-in-cheek task. If everyone on the planet donated $10, we'd still only be about a third of the way there.
It's highly unlikely Anheuser-Busch InBev fears a hostile buyout anytime soon. At the time of recording this episode, Take Back Craft had raised around just $3.5 million.
I think a huge part of this is the point that it makes in this campaign that the waters have gotten muddy, there's a lack of transparency, and now when Big Beer has gotten into this space where they purchased formerly independent craft brewers, they are not making it apparent to the beer lover that those beers are now owned by a huge global conglomerate brewery.
A lot of my peers, a lot of my fellow brewers were nervous about, you know, this kind of high-profile attack on the big guys. But I think our campaign is good-humored, and it's true. It points out a lot of truths that people don't know. And I think it's very difficult for them to respond to, you know. They've tried to push their fully-owned brewers out there, but I don't know, they sound like they're whining, you know, like, oh, you're dividing the industry, etc. They're dividing the industry when they come into a stadium and take 95% of the taps. That's dividing the industry in a way very detrimental to my business. And this is our way of fighting back. I mean, they are the Goliath and we are the David. And there's no way they can change that calculus. And this campaign, I think, points that up.
Part of the solution is ensuring craft beer is distributed as widely as brewers want it to be.
The chain buyers at chain restaurants and chain supermarkets and the like, they need to remain open-minded to ensure that we have a fair beer marketplace.
it's worrisome if you're in the first few years of business and you can't get a consistent line somewhere or some consistent shelf space or get the deli to buy your beer.
Bobby Gagnon opened the Gate Bar in 1997 when the craft beer market was still small.
It was pretty much impossible to do 24 craft beer lines because there weren't that many breweries distributing. I mean, now it's impossible to even keep everybody happy. Like, I could triple my lines and still have, you know, people banging the door down. One of the things I've often said is that, you know, in the early days we used to educate the customer, and now the customers come in educated.
Bobby is committed to keeping his line of taps almost exclusively for craft beer.
As far as that commitment goes, I think that what we try to do here is just support that independence, that independent spirit that kind of defines, you know, defines what craft beer is. Certainly small business, but there's a independent thinking, experimentation, you know, 24/7.
Craft brewers call themselves fiercely independent. Bobby Gagnon and Steve Hindy hope that attitude will help keep big beer monopolies at bay.
I do definitely worry about, you know, the continuing acquisitions, and I feel that there's much talk of a shakeout at all times with this many breweries in the country. But I feel like the best will, you know, this is American ingenuity. This is an American ingenuity story. And I think that will win out, and that will, there will remain a segment of craft brewery that will always survive. Having said that, you know, the giants will, you know, will smash down some walls.
It could happen. I mean, they could take it all back. And we could be left with just a bunch of tiny home brewers, you know, making beer and selling it to their neighbors. But I don't think that's going to happen, because I think there are some strong brands that have developed, and, you know, they're not going to go away, particularly if we do a better job exposing the brands that are really owned by the big guys.
At the time of recording this episode, the U.S. Department of Justice had filed a suit using antitrust laws to block AT&T's $85 billion bid to buy Time Warner. One of the government's conditions is that AT&T sell CNN. Some think this is a revenge attack by Donald Trump on the news outlet he so hates. We'll soon see if the Justice Department rejects the deal. A deal that will certainly eliminate almost all competition in the media and telecommunications industries. The bottom line? When there's healthy competition in any sector, the consumer benefits. But until Citizens United is overturned, politicians, for all their blustering rhetoric to the contrary, will remain in corporate pockets, and antitrust laws will just be words on paper. I'm Tara Cleary. Thanks for listening to Stimulus.